before you know it, it all comes down to Jungian symbolism, and boom, I already have the answers because I'm in the realm of this.
You'll end up with two genres which are the same thing but have different names because they worked different paths to get to that same place.
Look, when you grow up in a place where you didn't have dial-up till you were a teenager, I get to qualify as a millennial.
If you can't search for a thing by its name, it doesn't exist.
Philosophers. All right, David, what are we talking about today?
We're going to get specific.
Ooh.
Really specific. Ludicrously even.
Luda.
What?
Nothing. Ludicrous. Don't worry about it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yes. Prior conversation leaking into the podcast.
Yes, we're
going
to get there.
We'll get there.
We'll get around to it. Okay. Anyway, should I just give the whole context that I gave you?
Let's
or?
Do it. Yeah.
Okay. Let's. We'll start with that. Okay. So I was watching our good friend, who's not actually our friend because we don't know him, JJ McCullough.
Our good parasocial friend.
Yes, our parasocial. check out last week's episode for a brief mention of parasocial relationships. Mm-hmm. Okay. JJ McCullough, who made a video about. I'm going to say this, and you're probably not going to know what it is. Frutiger Arrow, which is the name given to an aesthetic from like the early 2000s-ish up to the early 2010s, which the Zoomers are now old enough to have nostalgia for, apparently. And the way that I summarize that aesthetic to Joe before the show is Windows Vista, the Windows Vista aesthetic. So if you've ever used or looked at Windows Vista or the advertising material for Windows Vista, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So anyway, he goes on about a lot of stuff about that that's not important to this episode. But one thing that he briefly touched on was how the name is a bad name because it doesn't tell you anything about what it is when you hear it, right? If I just say the words Frutiger Arrow, you might not even know how to spell that based on how I just said it. Much less would it tell you what I'm actually talking about. And that is kind of indicative. It's a symptom of the problem of absurd specificity about things, which JJ says is a thing that Zoomers are very fond of. But actually, I think it goes back even further than that. I have noticed that. I have noticed that Zoomers do tend to overcategorize things. But we were doing it before, and it started, I think, with like music genres, mm-hmm. which is where the first joke came in. Yes. So giving a name to every little thing. So we started earlier with genres of metal music. For those who don't know, what is metal music?
Not a bad question. I think a lot of people have very strong opinions about what is or isn't metal.
Yes. Is Def Leppard metal?
No comment.
I know. But, I mean, technically, I think so.
Yeah, it really just... What do you mean?
The definition has kind of slid around over the years. Because when rock and roll got distorted guitars, we were like, whoa, that's radical. That's a new sound. And then that kind of turned into its own aesthetic. Then what's harder than rock? Well, metal. Okay, but now... We're doing even crazier stuff than distorting the guitar a little bit. So what are we going to call that? Oh, we'll call it heavy metal, right?
Yeah.
As if that makes sense. Because regular metals aren't heavy, I guess.
Well, I think that comes from... Okay, first of all, we have used the term heavy metals before
mm-hmm.
for, well, heavy, literally atomically heavier metals.
Yeah.
But that sounds really cool.
Yes.
I.e. where anything gets its name. If you don't believe
me... But what's
the
difference between heavy metal and hard rock?
One's more brittle. obviously. But I've actually listened to a music snob on YouTube try to define the essence of heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Because... And I halfway agree with where he went, which is... There is this feeling we get about certain things we hear.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not ubiquitous, but it's ubiquitous enough for us to kind of want to give that thing its own name. So, chugging music.
Yes.
Like, yeah. that's one of the essences of heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Distortion is actually not required for heaviness necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
Neither is pitch.
Mm-hmm.
Although heavy metal is usually associated with lower tunings of guitars, it's not required. And so he goes all the way down to, it essentially doesn't mean anything, which I do agree with.
Yeah.
But there's this, and this is where he lost me, there's this just common human experience that we all have that allows us to come up with terms. And he linked it essentially back to symbology, where it's like, we all intuit these symbols the same way. Because we of our shared humanness, and I'm
right.
Like, yeah, but I don't agree. Like,
yeah, but we yeah, except that we don't. Except that it varies across cultures.
Exactly.
And as soon as you try to nail it down, it slips from your grasp. Right. That's the thing. It's like, okay, when the bass is fat, what does that mean?
Oh, I know what it means.
It just means it's very bassy. But all bass is bassy. That's what makes it bass. If the bass is thin, it's not bass anymore.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So it's just one of those things where it's like, well, I think this will get to like the point of it all, but it's those who listen to it know what it means.
Right. Learn the language. We all talk to each other about the thing, and we just, here's the thing. A group of folks are sitting around and listening to the same song together, and someone goes, wow, that was heavy. And everyone's like, yeah.
Or,
yeah,
that's nothing. This is way heavier.
Sure.
And then debate ensues more realistically, I feel like.
Sure. And then, yeah, they all come to a consensus about what that word means, heavy. And then that just propagates throughout a subculture.
Yep.
And then it gets put on Wikipedia as if it's a real scientific thing.
Yeah. One of them happens to know how to submit and edit articles on Wikipedia, and he is going to
prove.
And
now it's nailed down because I wrote it down, right?
Even though it might not be.
Yeah, except that the keyboard warriors will arrive and start fighting over what it is that you wrote down.
Right. So I do totally agree that this exists.
But although that's less of a complaint about absurd specificity and more of a complaint about words we use to describe music.
But the words we're using are trying to be absurd. But we end up, because there's a surplus of these words and we're trying to differentiate them with this absurd specificity.
Yes.
And I think it goes back even further than that. Politics is the OG absurd specificity in my mind.
Is it?
Okay, good example.
Politics is definitely a place where this happened, but I don't know if the absurd specificity happened until recently.
Okay. I'll have an example for you.
Okay.
Okay. What's the difference between the white Guelphs and the black Guelphs?
The what?
White Guelphs, G-U-E-L-E-F, and black Guelphs. And do you even know what I'm talking about?
No.
These are papal factions.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, from the papal states in the 1300s, where they were fractioning over the slightest disagreements.
Great.
In what papal policies should exist.
Okay.
And people were getting excommunicated.
That's true, actually.
We could go
to Protestant denominations as well.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah, and so...
See, okay, but... Okay, at least I will grant it to religious denominations that they can point to the, here is the place where we schismed away from the last thing that we were part of. Like, we disagreed about this particular doctrine and said no, and we're going to be our own thing.
Yeah, but they're a bunch of nerds that wrote crap down.
Yeah.
And that's really, I think, what separates it between that and... Well, and that's what's happening here. These different genres of music... I guarantee you a lot of people, but prior to internet, probably didn't have the same disagreements about genres of music unless you were like really into music. And then people started to like point fingers into what's neo-romantic, what's Baroque, what's postmodern Baroque.
But those are okay. But those actually refer to periods in time.
Sort of.
Nothing. There's never a cut and dry line. There's a little bit of bleed between them, but... Well, I mean, okay, until like the last 100 years, even making music that was recognized by people far away was special.
Right.
So there really wasn't a whole lot of need to categorize music because you probably didn't hear that much music in your whole life.
Sure.
Except like your local folk music, but no one really cared to categorize that. That was just the music that your people played.
Right. And I think that, well, I think that's also part of it, is that absurd, what does it mean for a level of specificity to become absurd? Absurd to who? Right? Because I guarantee you there's an army of graphic designers out there that are like furiously trying to find the right font to type into me mm-hmm. about how this matters. Because it's their livelihood. It matters to them. These absurd levels of specificity about, because these aesthetics are things that they use all the time. So to them, it's not absurd, but to the majority of people, it is absurd. Mm-hmm. And I think if you look at what absurdity even is, you know, I think we talked.
I mean, it is an opinion.
It is. It's ultimately an opinion, but I think it's the same thing. At what point do we say, okay, anything deeper than heavy metal is absurd, because at least all of the heavy metal people tend to agree on what heavy metal is as a broad category because they can fight over their subcategories mm-hmm. good enough, right? And I think that's ultimately where you see the gradient shift, where it's like, and because the majority of people were religious, I think that's maybe why it was okay. But I'm sure there were absurd levels of specificity back then that didn't matter to people outside of those realms. Like, I mean, look at the level, like you could get really specific about real things like different Native American tribes. They were very different and had very different cultures.
Yes.
But we lopped them all together and they're Indians now.
Mm-hmm.
And good enough, because we're treating them the same way, you know, whereas if we would have understood their levels of specificity, we would have still treated them the same way with just knowing that they're different, right? So I think it just depends on the perspective.
But I mean, but these are like people who declare their own allegiances and have their own, it's not just like, oh, these people prefer, you know, to wear this color of clothing and not this or whatever, or they celebrate this holiday and don't. Like maybe you could draw the line there, but really you can figure out what tribe someone is a part of by what they say they're a part of.
Sure.
It's no different than like figuring out what family someone's a part of, right? And I wouldn't say that us all having different family names, even though they actually aren't that different, there's a lot of really common family names. But if we ignore that and we pretended that people really did have very specific family names, I don't think I would call that absurd, because there's... I see you giving me a look.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just letting you finish.
Well, we can draw... We can delineate, at least, well, to a certain extent, we can delineate genetically.
Sure. Just like we can delineate the different...
But the point is that families get their name... In our culture, family names are passed down. So you're a part of a family if you're born and given that name.
Yeah.
And we can group all the people in an area together and say, well, the Germans or something like that, but they're all different families and such.
I was about to say, do you know all the distinct sub regions of Germany though?
No.
And I guess this is the point, is that yes, is the point you're trying to make is that some of these things come from real objective things that we can all agree on. Like you're from a distinctly geographically different area than this other geographically distinct area.
Well, even that, the lines get a little bit blurry if it's just about the geographic area.
At this point in time, anyway. Like, where was Bavaria at this point in time? Ergo, everybody who was historically from here or had a family that traced lineage back to this point at this time when it mattered might identify themselves as Bavarian as sure. opposed to German, mm-hmm. right? And it's like, okay, but at least I know what you're talking about and what you're trying to evoke. Because... I can understand without having to be steeped in Bavarian culture mm-hmm. that you're drawing it to that, because I also have a culture and I am a part of a subculture of a bigger culture. So mm-hmm. I can understand how my subculture relates to yours. But when it comes to things like metal genres, you really have to be steeped into metal culture to understand the subgenres, just like in order.
Well, and as the genres get more and more specific, you just have to start listening to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like reading about it is not going to tell you the difference. But actually, maybe even some of these genres are so similar to each other. Well, the funny thing is that people will splinter and fracture these genres, and eventually you'll end up with two genres which are the same thing but have different names because they worked different paths to get to that same place.
Right.
Different paths of fracturing to find that same place. But ignoring that, a lot of these genres can get so close together that you just listening to them as an outsider, you won't be able to tell the difference. Mm-hmm. So it takes someone who is already very steeped in the culture to sit with you and say, okay, now here, but listen to this different thing about how this other band plays. And that's, you know, that's different.
Sure. You know, I also think you could get the same place with like actual cultures. Like if there are subcultures of Japan, I don't speak Japanese. Mm-hmm. They all speak Japanese and they're from there and they know what's different.
Yeah.
They're steeped in it. They just know. But if I did not know, or China is a better example because China is a pretty fractured country, culturally speaking. Mm-hmm. There's very distinct cultures. So far down that there are actually distinct linguistic differences, right? Mm-hmm. But to me, it's Chinese, as they say, you know, like, yeah, you're all Chinese.
Sure.
You look Chinese. You talk Chinese.
Literally far away. Yeah.
You're literally far away. You all seem to love dragons, I guess. But like, I don't know. Like,
right. Even though there's probably some of them that don't. Like,
sure. But I mean, but if I were to look at a dish.
That's the part that leaks its way over here, though. Yeah.
Right. But if I were to look at a dish and it's like, okay, I see fried rice in here. This is fried rice.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's like, well, actually, we cooked this with a specific kind of broth that was native to whatever. It's like, cool. Yeah. It's fried rice.
Or we
though.
Made it like with this specific oil that we extracted from whatever native plant. Yeah.
Don't. It's fried rice. Like, it's just slightly tangier fried rice to me. Like,
right.
But if you put it on a menu with its name, which they often do, mm-hmm. I don't care. I want the number 38, please, that looks the picture that looks like fried rice next to it. You know? So even though, yes, there are objective differences. Because I don't
know. How
meaningful are they? Right. And I think it matters to different people. People who are really into food will be picky about the different subgenres of cooking of Chinese food. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where that's what I'm trying to get at with this. What is absurd? It's just like, well, it kind of depends on the time and place, but also if you wanted to maybe make it more broadly appealing, it's like, does the majority of the population in this area know, is even aware of, or care that there is a difference between two things? And if not, then it's absurd, I think, is yes. Maybe in that area, right? So again, in the United States, the differences between the regional cooking styles in China, it's fried rice, don't care, good enough, absurd that you're being this level deep about it.
And let's maybe contrast this with a different area that I feel like has not gone into absurd levels of specificity, which, and this is adjacent to something that we said before the show. We can go ahead and say the same, the thing that we said before the show is that maybe a more meaningful thing would be to just say, I like this band, right?
Right.
Instead of saying, I like whatever obscure genre of metal, just say, I like this band. And then people know the kind of sound that you like. And that communicated a lot more than telling them some obscure name they've never heard before.
Right.
A different area, video games.
Okay.
How do we categorize video games? There's
poorly.
Lots of, poorly, maybe. But these days, we seem to have converged on a pattern of sorts.
Yeah, there's a mechanical way that we classify them. There's a perspective way we classify them. And then there's, I think those are the two main ways.
Yes, but okay, what I mean that is adjacent to the I like this band.
Likes.
Yes, blank likes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I like games that are like that. Those are that like.
Right, or if they're ubiquitous enough.
Right.
That most people have either played one or played a like of it. That was marketed as a like, because mm-hmm. this is something that's also reinforced by the makers and sellers of games, is if you go onto a game distribution platform like Steam, you can search by certain like. Roguelike's the most common.
Roguelike is the one everyone knows, and we've talked about that on the show before, oddly enough.
Yeah.
And about how roguelikes are not really like Rogue, but that's kind of beside the point.
It is, yeah.
But there are still things about them that are like Rogue.
Right.
And it's the things that stuck in people's mind. So it's just like, okay, yeah, games that are like Rogue in some sort of way.
And I think maybe that's hitting a bit on why people who are in the know.
Another one that I know, which is not called a blank like, but Metroidvania. You heard that name before?
I have. Yeah, Metroid Prime and Castlevania.
Well, Metroid and that's, Castlevania.
That's true.
Metroid is a much older thing than Metroid Prime. Anyway, yeah. So Metroid and Castlevania, which, and actually a true, I don't even know if Metroid Prime counts as a Metroidvania.
It doesn't. It's not a side scroller.
It's not side scroller. Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, OG Metroid and Castlevania, side scrolling, 2D style games. In which, and the important aspect is that you are exploring a world, like a labyrinth, and upgrading your character to pass obstacles that unlock larger sections of the map.
Right.
Basically. Yep. It's a constant progression, which unlocks the world. That's a Metroidvania.
Yep. Arguably 2D side-scroller as well, but...
Right, yes, yeah. Again.
Depends.
Yeah, it depends.
Yeah, and I think... maybe this is where this comes from a bit, is it's your complaint, which is that, but like, why is this thing a roguelike? Because it okay, so the only thing about it that's like Rogue is that when you die, you have to start over, or there's some procedural
generation.
Right,
that's the one that everyone knows, yeah. Yeah, procedurally generated map and permadeath, yeah.
Permadeath, okay, cool. And so there's the core thing that we could have just named the genre, permadeath. Right. And it would actually be way more accurate than calling it a roguelike.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of other things about Rogue that none of these games are like, you know? But because people didn't want maybe certain of their games who have other elements like Rogue that are more than just permadeath, didn't want to just try to create a different genre around that permadeath mechanic, they wanted it to be linked to Rogue because maybe they're trying to invoke that spirit. So similar with metal genres, one thing they all have in common is they have the word metal in them.
Yeah, there's metal.
Mm-hmm. And they don't, and I think this is really where it comes down to, and I would say, well, I'll say two things. One, the reason they don't just say, I like Life of Agony bands, mm-hmm. or Slipknot-like bands,
mm-hmm.
I think there's two reasons. The older reason is there are bands like Slipknot that Slipknot fans do not like at all, actually. They actually hate them more than entirely different kinds of music. So they don't want to create a genre that it assumes that they like that. And I deal with this a lot. I hate the music picking algorithm. I hate it. It's terrible at it because I like very different genres of music for really stupid reasons sometimes. So, for example, I love the way vocoders sound.
Okay.
Which is, for those who don't know, Daft Punk uses them all the time. It's when a person speaks into a microphone and it's pitched up or down using another instrument, essentially. Or it's digitally translated and then comes out with a pitch that's not usually the singer's voice pitch. Sometimes right. can be, but not always. Talk boxes are more analog versions of this, if you've heard of one of those,
yes.
which is literally a tube that runs out of the instrument's amplifier. So it's making the pitches you want with the tone you want.
Right. And
you stick it
in your mouth, and then it bounces. It goes through your vocal system to create a sound that's kind of like a voice, but not really.
Right. But because your mouth can mouth the words that you're trying to say, you can form words out of that. So instead of using your actual larynx to make the pitches, you're using something else to give it a totally different sound, but you're still mouthing out the
words. But
you can
make it sound like a spoken voice. Yeah.
Exactly, like a really articulate robot. I love that sound in music. I just do. If I listen to any band, though, that uses that strategy, it will not just assume that I like all of the things like that, because there are tons of genres that use this type of sound.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, rock does it. A lot of electronic does it, but not all. And so if I start listening to one of the bands that uses that, and then I even add to the playlist other bands that use this thing, music sorting algorithms are not good at isolating the fact that, oh, we just need to do digital voices. That's what he wants. That's
right.
What these all have in common.
Well, it's because it's looking at stuff like, well, first of all, I think a big part of it is it's looking at stuff like the genre that's tagged on the thing.
Yep.
Right. That we have given these genre names such importance that we think that that's an important thing to look at first rather than the components.
Right.
Like
there's plenty of techno that I absolutely hate.
Mm-hmm.
I actually hate most techno music. because it's awful. It's grating.
I hate it because it's bad.
To me, it's yeah. grating on my ears yeah. to listen to. But that one element can elevate that whole genre for me to be right. enjoyable. So when I get recommended Moby, I'm like, oh, gross, dislike, do not want to listen to. Mm-hmm. Or even worse, because...
But Joe, it's in a genre that you like.
Well, but here's another thing that's even worse about it. Phil Collins uses it occasionally. Mm-hmm. And guess what? I like those songs, but I kind of can't stand the rest of his music. Mm. So it's like, you can't even go within the same artist.
Yeah.
You know? But the second reason I think that this has become such a thing for the Zoomies is that you do not want to be exclusive. And to say I like this band, right, and not anything else in the genre, or I like this the most, I think that creating a subgenre or a very niche grouping allows you to include other things together. There's this inherent desire to be inclusive about things.
There's that, but also I actually heard an even more interesting hypothesis about it. I'm pretty sure JJ also brought this up. That this is just an assertion that in Zoomer culture, whatever that is, something doesn't exist until it has a name.
Interesting.
That was the hypothesis, that the reason why it is why Zoomers seem particularly drawn to absurd specificity is because they grew up with the internet. Mm-hmm. And if you can't search for a thing by its name, it doesn't exist.
Interesting. And they created it by putting it on a wiki.
Yes. So they gave names to things, so now you can search for them.
You know, they're not wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Although we had a thing for this before, and it's kind of annoying that we don't use it. We could just tag things.
Yes.
But oh well, I guess. Names will work. Yeah, I mean, that actually kind of makes some sense.
It does.
And also, there's with the internet, there's this capability to... Like, categories are larger than individual instances a lot of the time. And I think there's also this... And there's this idea, maybe, that if something belongs to a group or a category, it's greater than now. Mm-hmm. But if you name it after the one thing that it is, and maybe that's why we don't see... you know, X like whatever very often is that that's inherently exclusive, right? Like, and it makes one of them special. And like Rogue, I think, gets a pass. Well, A, gamers are not, they don't care.
Not really.
But also it came first enough. I don't even know if Rogue was the first roguelike or if there's a roguelike older than Rogue.
I doubt it. Rogue is pretty old.
It is pretty old.
It's one of the earliest video games. It's so old.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. But with the internet, you have the ability to, like, group up around a category. But there's, like, a balance at play, too, where being in a counterculture kind of has always been in vogue for the youth, I think. And in order for you to be a counterculture, there needs to be something more mainstream that you want to stand against. And I feel like as a person who is involved in, a lot in the metal scene for a while, it was really cool to be like, so you like metal? Not just any metal. Like I'm about to flex on you with mm-hmm. my metal knowledge to show you how dyed in the wool an actual metal fan I am. And you can identify me as such because my knowledge about, you know, how cool metal is. And that's a nerd culture thing for sure. Like my wife actually pointed out that she likes to play some games, but she hates talking about games. She hates going to game stores because there is such a, there's this desire to test people that nerds have. Mm-hmm. Like how in the know are you? Like if I said, man, you know, I'm a pretty big Mario fan.
Mm-hmm.
Your tendency, I guarantee you in your head, you're scrolling up a list of all the different Mario games.
Can you even name all the Mario games? Like,
yeah, exactly. Can you even name them?
Shoutouts to Jan Measley, who made a video about how many Mario games even are there.
Do you even know what the first Mario game even was? Oh, you didn't even get into Mario until the SNES came out. Super Mario Brothers. Wow. Cringe.
That's not what system Super Mario Brothers was on.
Exactly. Who cares is my point. But some people do. And they need to know how down with Mario you are before they're like, okay, you can call yourself a Mario. Gatekeeping. That's exactly what it is. Subgenres, especially superfluous ones like this, allow for gatekeeping. They're gates
for you to keep, yeah.
Exactly. And if, and so is this whatever Frutiger Arrow thing. I guarantee you there are aestheticists out there that love to gatekeep about how they know about the different aesthetics. And even though they could just do what you did and say, what is Frutiger Arrow? You have a choice here. You can say, like Windows Vista, like stuff like that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Know exactly what you mean. Or you can assert yourself higher in the social dominance hierarchy. You can put yourself up there as a knower, and your knowledge is power, and say, oh, wow, if you don't know, then you clearly don't know as much as I do about whatever, because I know this name. Even if it's superfluous, but it feels good to flex on people to for some cloudy points and know that you know what this is and they don't by gatekeeping. And so I actually, yeah, now I'm all in, I'm formulating a hypothesis that anyone could also me not liking being snooted at by people who think that they know more than me.
Anti-snootist.
I'm an anti-snooterist. not a fan. I'm concocting a takedown strategy for people when they're superfluous like that, because it's really annoying to me, and meaningless ultimately. Like, who cares? And where did this pretentious name come from? Ugh. Sorry, I'm getting hot and bothered about this now. What were we talking about? Like,
I've lost the plot. Also,
I've lost the plot. Also, yeah. So yeah, I think that's really okay. Yeah, unnecessary subgenres for gatekeeping. People love to gatekeep because it gives you an inflated sense of self-importance.
Slight correction. Nerds like to gatekeep.
Really?
Mm.
It was hot today.
Oh my goodness, you're right. You're right. You don't even know what hot is.
Okay. Yep, I'm going to gatekeep heat from you. How about that?
I am the keeper of heat.
Yeah, exactly. That's a pretty cool. I need to use that as a username. Keeper of Heat.
Keeper of Heat. That probably is not taken.
It's a good one, though. Woo, boy. Okay. But yeah, I think gatekeeping is just a human thing that we do to push people down and increase our own legitimacy over others. Because really, why are scientists the scientists? Now, you and I know it should be because they make a living using the scientific method on things to gather more knowledge and discover things. But in reality, the reason Neil deGrasse Tyson is drug out in front of the masses is because, oh yes, he's the knower of things. He knows more of the science than me, and he has to demonstrate it all the time. And if someone else comes out and says, actually, Neil, you're wrong, I know more science than you, whoa, Neil got BTFO'd. He's no longer even really a scientist.
He's no longer even
he doesn't even know about the quarks and stuff. Like,
quarks and stuff.
Exactly. Yes. So he loses legitimacy. And this is a, okay, there's a side thing I kind of wanted to talk about that I don't think we could fit in a whole episode, but I want to dovetail into this episode. Okay. You're welcome. Podcasts are getting out of hand a little bit.
Yeah.
And what are your thoughts on people who have podcasts because they're an expert in something and then they talk about something entirely outside of their realm of expertise?
Oh, you mean like this show?
Like this show, yes. But we didn't even set this show up as, hey, we happen to be employed in this business sector and know a lot about this.
No, we don't. We do not do a show about our own field. Yeah.
No, we don't. And we even have it in the name that we're fakers. We don't know a lot.
Yes.
We're trying to be entertaining. And that should be the number one thing on the tin, is we want to talk about interesting stuff that we probably don't know as much about as a lot of other people. But
it's fun to think about.
But it's fun to think about. However, if you're someone like Jordan Peterson, who is a licensed practicing clinical psychologist, so he's established himself with credentials. And then on top of that, he started out pretty parallel to his field. Because this podcast is older than his fame. And it's usually just a lot of his old lessons from when he taught psychology, his expertise.
His actual field, yeah.
Right. But then politics happens.
Yes.
You know, and I'm not saying your words. Okay.
And I've read some Dostoevsky.
Yes.
Yeah.
And now, and he's arguably, I think, maybe even worse than the normal person who does this. But now I'm going to take issue that's in that's distinctly in a realm not mine, and I'm going to bring it into my realm where I can beat you because I'm an expert in psychology.
Mm-hmm.
So why is using pronouns bad? It has to do with identity politics. Identity is due to psychology. You know, before you know it, it all comes down to Jungian symbolism, and boom, I already have the answers because I'm in the realm of this. And it's mm-hmm. like, wait, I thought we were talking about a law that was getting passed. But we started talking about that, and now I've ended up into a psych lecture with someone who is established with credentials. It's like, wait a minute. You know, and then like more absurd things like his weird diet plan. I've seen people like him talk on podcasts about his absurd diet, which on the one hand, I'm like, cool, you have a weird thing that you do that's interesting to know about. But the problem is that people latch on and go, well, he's God on earth and happens to know everything. So if he only eats beef, I'm only going to eat beef. Now there's an entire genre of these podcasts that talk about alternative diets, and they're in vogue now based around his, you know. Like, where do you draw the line on that kind of thing?
Where do I draw the line?
Yeah, like, what are your thoughts on it? Like, how do you categorize it? Because I think that there isn't anything wrong with people who have a lot of expertise wanting to talk about it. But, like, at what point does... How clear should you be about how, okay, I am a physicist. Talks about physics for a while. All right, now I'm about to make a life... I'm switching to lifestyle advice. But I've been talking about how I'm an expert on physics and demonstrating my knowledge of physics. And now I'm going to tell you how you should live your life for a minute and then back to physics. But and I think each person is the summation of all
of
those things.
I think
right?
I think that's kind of its own form of gatekeeping, like stay in your lane. Stay in your lane is another form of gatekeeping.
Sure. Well, okay, but what do you mean when you say stay in your lane?
Well, you're a scientist, so you should talk about science only.
Okay, that's not what I mean. What I mean is, how much should we expect someone to acknowledge when they're switching out of an area in which they're credentialed to a topic that they are not, and they're just speaking to you as a person? Because scientists are people, but they're also scientists, because scientists are a subgroup of people.
Mm-hmm.
So you can talk about science in the science realm, but when you step out of that and it's like, okay, now I'm going to be talking about something that just affects me in my personal life. I'm off the clock now. I am me as person. This is what I think about this. And I think, you know, that's kind of what I'm talking about.
Yeah. I mean, I think that people who are careful about the way they speak would do well to announce, this is my opinion, before giving an opinion.
Right.
Especially in a context in which they have been making fact claims prior to this, right?
Right.
Like, I've been talking about all these things that I'm going to assert are true. Aside, I'm going to give you my opinion. Now back to the other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I think that is probably... That is a prudent thing to do.
Yeah.
But... I don't know about drawing lines and saying that it's like wrong to not do that.
I think always it comes down to kind of your intentions.
Yeah.
A little bit, you know. But the fact is that you're on a podcast that you're getting paid,
mm-hmm.
where your personal opinion about a product or a service may or may not be affected by the fact you're a scientist, although it may have nothing to do with it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think that should be pretty obvious. Don't get me wrong, I'm a buyer beware person. If you're going to listen to some scientist, some doctor on a podcast about something, and you follow their advice, and they lead you astray, it's your fault.
Right.
That's how I feel about it. But at the same time, you know, if I were to tell people about it, it's like, you can give warnings to people all day about how, by the way, this is your fault if you follow this advice and it doesn't work out. And everyone's like, yeah, no, it's fine. And then they do it and they're like, I can't believe that I was betrayed. Like, surprise Pikachu face when guy on podcast told you about a product or service you bought and it didn't change your life. You know what I mean? Like, I think my general advice to people around that would be very similar to what we talked about when we're talking about the, you know, influencers, you know, which is that beware of their intentions, and you should call people's intentions into question. No one's above reproach, you know. And I feel like that's related to this topic, because this creates credentialed areas where people can demonstrate that I'm in the know with Fruity Guerrero, so I clearly know what I'm talking about. Kind of a big deal, you know. By the way, you should do red light therapy. It's great. What? Have we even done an episode on gatekeeping? I'm now starting to wonder if we have.
I don't remember one.
Because
we've seen what that's worth lately. I'm starting to forget the ones that we've done.
That's true.
We're finally at that threshold where it's like, I don't remember if we've talked about this before or not.
Because I'm kind of at this point where I'm like, because you're like, well, that's gatekeeping too. And I'm like, is gatekeeping really all that bad? And I don't know if we can go over it in 20 minutes. Probably, I think.
Maybe. Yeah.
Merchants, probably.
Merchants, probably.
And they got spices.
We're about to have spices, I think. So, I mean, I think there are some things that are worth gatekeeping. Let's take your example. Medicine. We should probably gatekeep medicine. Like, things that actually have a real impact on people's health and well-being. Because what is gatekeeping besides, like... Did you see something funny?
I did. There's a picture on this Wikipedia article about gatekeeping communication where it says a visual representation of gatekeeping, and it's just a gate in front of a hedge. Why is this necessary? Anyway.
Okay. So... So what even is gatekeeping if not like expert checking, right?
Well, I think it depends, because according to this, gatekeeping is the process through which information is filtered for dissemination, whether for publication, broadcasting, the internet, or some other mode of communication. The academic theory of gatekeeping may be found in multiple fields of study, including communication studies, journalism, political science, and sociology. Gatekeeping originally focused on the mass media with its few too many dynamic. Currently, gatekeeping theory also addresses face-to-face communication and the many too many dynamic inherent on the internet. So I guess using it in the few to many context, i.e. journalism, mm-hmm. or the news, not the same thing, gatekeeping was you rely on the news agency to vet that the person who's going to come on and talk about the eclipse is actually an astrologer, not astrologist.
Well, I mean, they could be an astrologer.
An astronomist or astronomer, and they're going to set up the context for, okay, this is a person that is in the know with the stars and the moon and such, and they're going to tell you about how the eclipse works and what you should expect about the eclipse and what it is and all that stuff. And so people had a degree of trust in their news where they're like, okay, well, the news is going to vet out wackadoodle nuts and make sure that I only see, you know, the expert opinion about mm-hmm. this thing, right? Which I think pretty much ever since the inception of the news, people have been calling into question that gatekeeping about, is this really, A, what they even do, and B, should they even do it, and C, you know, do we even want to have a, you know, wreathed in area of what journalism is, mm-hmm. you know, because anyone can be bought. And if you centralize it and you cut down to a handful of different things, it's a lot easier to alter the dissemination of information. But that's not really what we're talking about necessarily, is it? Or are we talking about who gets to be the authority on what nu metal is? Because that's, I think, arguably what's happening when you start gatekeeping is you're trying to corner yourself out. You're trying to exclude other people from being...
That's not a knife.
This
is a knife.
Yeah.
That's the gatekeeping we're talking about.
That's the gatekeeping we're talking about, yeah. And I think when it comes to the things that we were talking about earlier, like the superfluous things, it's ridiculous because, A, who even cares who the authority on that is, because it's superfluous.
Right.
So it's foolish to try to do that, or dumb, you know, and honestly embarrassing. I think that's what nerds get made fun of a lot.
Yes.
You know, like,
caring about things that don't matter.
Right. And then trying to gatekeep them, like, well, your plus two paladin sword is nothing compared to my plus three rogue's dagger. It's like, okay, nerd. Like,
yeah,
that's the kind of example, I think, of things I hear about when people are really adding nerds.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they are different, but like, it's not important.
even though the rogue's dagger really is better.
It really is, actually. The backstab damage is just totally superior. You can one-shot most things if you're stealthed. But anyway, not important. by the way.
By the way.
Actually.
Pushes up glasses.
Gets out typing gloves.
Typing gloves.
Time to type fast.
That's an aesthetic right there. The type of person who wears typing gloves.
Fingerless gloves to enhance their typing speed. Yes. Gross.
Gross.
You can smell it now. They don't wash those gloves, and their hands sweat when they type.
We don't need to go down this road.
I'm sorry, my brain's already going there. So, like, I don't know. On the one hand, I do agree that, yeah, I would prefer people that are in the know with the science be the ones who kind of have the say. But at the same time, who are you to say that you're in the know with the science? And maybe science is like the one example of things that is a good example of something that maybe could be gatekept, because it's supposed to have evidence behind it.
Right. Do the experiment if you want to say I'm wrong. Yeah.
Right. And then all you need to do is do the experiment to then get access to, actually, no, you're wrong, because I did it, and here's how you're wrong, and then now you're equals in the arena.
Or even if you can't do the experiment, read my paper and look at the objective findings and disagree with my conclusion for one reason or another.
Right. And I think a great example of that is like, oh, well, 90% of the people tested responded positively to this drug. It's like, well, yeah, but according to your own thing, 90% of these people were already on an improved diet plan. So you've tainted your study by this other factor you're not accounting for. Like, you can use their own facts against them in a way.
Yeah.
And that's a good kind of gatekeeping. That's what we want. That's the kind of, not gatekeeping, but
that's truth searching.
Yeah, that's truth searching, where we really only want the people in their questioning claims to have actually done the work or reviewed the work that was done anyway. Mm-hmm. Not just, well, I think that's just like, you know, your opinion, man, and it's aliens. But like,
I saw a thing today, just slight tangent about aliens. I saw a thing today, an artistic depiction of people building the Egyptian pyramids.
Oh no.
And, you know, the foreman, you know, giving him orders, and one of them was complaining. He's like, man, I'm done with this. I'm tired of this job. It's awful. My back is hurting or whatever. And the other guy next to him is like, don't worry. In thousands of years, we'll be well respected for what we did. You know, we'll be remembered forever for this. And then fast forward to the future, some guy looking at the pyramid is like, aliens.
Aliens taking all the credit. Oh, man. I think one other part of this that's probably worth attaching on here at the end is it's weird to think of Zoomer nostalgia, because it's like, you just got here, you know.
But
like,
they didn't.
But they didn't, but they kind of did, relatively. I, as a millennial, I'm taking my seat.
You're like barely millennial, though.
I'm millennial enough.
Yeah.
Look, when you grew up in a place where you didn't have dial-up till you were a teenager, I get to qualify as a millennial.
Sure.
I lived the millennial existence because my geographic region just happens to be about a decade behind everyone else, especially at the time. So yeah, I think I firmly fit in the millennial camp.
Okay.
At least in lifestyle. I think culturally I identify with millennials.
That's probably true. I also identify as a millennial, and I'm even closer to the edge than you are.
True. Also, it depends, I think, what generation were the people most responsible for your upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
I had some firm Gen X / boomer parentage that really helped cement me down as a millennial.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like they weren't even on the line, so it helped a bit, I think. But it is weird thinking about, there was the other thing, remembering things that, or ascribing value to the aesthetic of the thing that had that didn't exist. Like, what was the example you gave?
Yeah, so the thing that JJ was complaining about in his video, okay, JJ's thesis, he comes out swinging. He's like, this is a fake aesthetic that, but okay, not a fake aesthetic, sorry, he didn't say the aesthetic is fake. The aesthetic is very real. The nostalgia is fake.
Yeah.
Not, and again, not the nostalgia that they feel when they see those things, right? The feelings are real. But yes, he criticizes that Zoomers now looking back on that aesthetic are ascribing values to it that were never present when it was current.
Right.
Such as, okay, the fact that Frutiger Arrow, the aesthetic, is like the blend of photorealistic graphics, but also like technology. Like the mixture of nature and technology, it graphically speaking, but people looking back on it nostalgically are thinking, oh yes, this was so forward thinking and optimistic that they were imagining a future in which technology and nature coexist. And it's like, nobody was thinking that at the time. No. They were thinking, wow, look at these amazing graphics we can do on these new computers.
Yep.
And look at this. This is a type of picture that we couldn't have made 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because it's computer graphics, right? It's not a photo. The fact that we can render things that are this realistic looking, but then put a bit of technology in it to demonstrate to you that this isn't a photo or something.
Yes.
Yeah. Like that's what it is. It's showing off.
Right. And you know what? I think that's kind of funny that your thing about the pyramids procced that for me.
Okay.
Because I think a lot of things in history have just been people showing off that gets much more altruistic values ascribed to it later.
Yes.
I.e. the pyramids. Bro, my tomb is massive. Like, you have not even prepared a modest mastaba. Look at my massive big pyramid.
Big triangle.
Bigum triangle that no one's going to be able to steal all my crap. TM.
Right.
Meanwhile, we look back at it and, like, people use this to like measure the stars, and like they were so forward and technologically advanced, and it's like because they were moving forward as a civilization, like the Egyptian system was very advanced for what it did because it was able to do the pyramids. It's like sorta,
yeah, or a rich guy got like 10,000 poor people to smack some rocks together and haul it up and build this thing.
Yeah, which is funny because I imagine at the time there were workers probably eating lunch, legs hanging over one of these giant blocks at the top, halfway up this halfway constructed pyramid, looking around and going, this is ridiculous. One of them complaining, we're doing all of this work just so that a guy has a place to be dead in. This is ridiculous. And someone's saying, like, hey man, but the money's green or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, we're
or
doing
shiny
it.
Or whatever.
The money's shiny. Yeah, the salt is salty, you know, like, or whatever they're paid in, mm-hmm, at the time. We're doing it though. It's what it pays the bills. And that's it. And I think it's kind of funny because I saw an interesting article about someone ranting about how, like, Elon Musk's SpaceX Starlink program, how he just turned off the internet in like some country that was having they were about to do some military operation that he thought was wrong, or mm-hmm, he didn't like, so he just shut off their internet so they couldn't communicate because he can, because mm-hmm, he owns the satellites. And then he turned it back on after they went to the negotiating table with him, and people were like, this is absurd, cannot believe that this guy would do that. 1,000 years from now, someone's gonna be like, this guy, look, we did these internet satellite constellations, look at how advanced and connected we were trying to be back at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, a rich guy with an ego decided, yeah. And I think that's hilarious, it's a youthful optimism that it seems to be just kind of a thing that's timeless. Like
yes,
there's always this youthful optimism that wants to both ascribe modern values and things that they think are good to older things, as close as they'll get to that's like a step along the way of becoming a boomer, as yes. you might say, is first, everything was wrong. No good ideas were ever had until I got here.
Yes.
And then actually, there were some really good ideas, but it wasn't the generation that immediately preceded me or the one before them. It was further back than that, and they knew what they were getting at here. Or there were visionaries in prior generations, but the rest of them, they were just misunderstood. But it's actually you just ascribing these values that you think are good mm-hmm. to totally much more mundane reasons, you know? And I just think that's funny. I'm going to start thinking about what are all of the things that are happening now that it's just because some rich dude has an ego. Like, the city of Dubai is going to go down in history like that. The Burj Khalifa is going to go down as some kind of marvel of engineering about how of resilience in the desert, but actually some rich dudes that found oil were paid a lot of money and they were like, let's just see what happens when we can make it literally make it rain because we're so wealthy.
Yes.
And it's just a flex, you know? Oh man. This was a very all over the place, very philosopher's episode, and I really enjoyed it.
Yes.
I don't know if you enjoyed listening to it, but we enjoyed making it.
It was fun.
It was fun. And I don't think I have anything else to add on that before it's like we're about to dive into a topic that we don't have time for. Do you have any summations for this?
I'm fired.
You're fired. And on and on that, philosophers.
Philosophers. If you like the music in this episode, please check out Jippy on Bandcamp at jippy.bandcamp.com.
Philosophers is supported by viewers like you.
If there's a topic you'd like us to discuss,
or a topic you'd like to see revisited in the future,
please let us know by contacting us using the methods in the description,
or in the comments below. Thank you for listening.